This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Nationally, Ohio is seen as a swing state. President Trump won the state with 51.8% of the popular vote in 2016. Barack Obama won in 2008 with 51.5% and with 50.7% in 2012. Ohio has one Democratic senator and one Republican senator. But when it comes to Ohio's delegation to the U.S. House of Representatives, Republicans control 12 seats and the Democrats have only four. What explains that? Gerrymandering. Because the Republican Party has controlled key statewide offices for a long time, they have controlled the redistricting process after the census every 10 years. They have split significant Democratic population bases, like the city of Cincinnati and its inner suburbs, between the first and second congressional districts, leaving Republicans with safe or almost safe seats. Or they have concentrated a heavy Democratic population, as in the case of the city of Dayton, into a safe Democratic seat. Issue 1, on Tuesday's primary ballot, proposes a new method of redistricting. The proposal was worked out by community groups and good government groups and is endorsed by a cross-section of civic groups from the League of Women Voters to the AFL-CIO to the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber and both the Democratic and Republican parties. To explore the ins and outs of Issue 1, I am joined again by our panel for today, Cincinnati Enquirer Columbus Bureau Chief Chrissy Thompson, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News reporter and producer Andy Chow, and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. I'd like to remind you, if you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@WVXU. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. So, Issue 1, this is maybe in terms of long-term impact, there isn't anything more important on the ballot on Tuesday. This is an unusual proposal in the sense that it has so much support from so many different groups that normally would be opposed to each other, not the least of which both the organized Democratic and organized Republican parties both support this. How do you explain this? Let's start with Andy this time.
Yeah, I think the best way to explain it is that nobody has the ability to tell the future. And so because of that, everybody wants to come up with a system that would be fair to anybody, even if you were in the minority party. So, this is a process that, if passed, wouldn't go into play until the year 2020 and the year 2021, because it's going to be based off of the next census. And so because of that, the Republicans are looking at the process and saying, well, listen, the way it's set up now, we would be in control of developing the maps. So maybe we would like the current process, but they don't know if they're going to be in power in the year 2020, and neither do the Democrats. And because of that, because it's so far into the future, they both decided that they needed to pass something that would work for any party, that would be fair for any party, even if you happen to be in the minority.
Isn't part of this as well that the group pushing for a change in the process, if there hadn't been agreement, might have pushed for an even more radical proposal?
Yeah, they were using that as their bargaining chip. They kept saying, listen, if the legislature, because this is a measure that was passed by the legislature and then put onto the ballot. But those groups were saying, if you don't do this, if you don't get this done, then we're going to take it to the voters. We're going to collect all the signatures we need and then put it on the November ballot. And it would have been something that current lawmakers would not have liked. It wouldn't have been as something that they would have liked as much.
Chrissy, what actually will this do? I mean, how does this change what the standards and rules are for drawing district lines in the future?
Okay, I'm going to take a shot at this. And it was passed when I was on maternity leave, so you guys jump in if I get this wrong. So right now, just whoever is in the majority creates the map that they want, and they vote, and it passes. That's pretty much what happens. It's a simplified version, but that's what happens.
And I think just to add to that, there really are no rules right now. Whoever's in charge gets to do what they want.
I mean, you can't be struck down by a court, so you can't pack districts with too many minorities, and you can't, like, people have to, like, live technically connected to each other in some way. You have to be able to draw a continuous line around it. But yes, you're right. There are not that many rules. So the proposal, so the current map lasts 10 years. It's redone every census. This proposal would, it has several different contingencies, but in the most basic sense, it would also last 10 years. Mm-hmm. At the end of the census, legislature would once again get to draw the map. So they use staff members, et cetera, to do this. And then it would have to pass 60% of both houses in the legislature, including half of the members of the minority. So right now that's Democrats, but at one time that was Republicans. So it could happen again. And then if they agree on that, that's the map. There are several other steps. The second step, if they can't agree with the correct number of votes, sends it to a panel, which includes some statewide elected officials and then a couple of members of the legislature. Again, they must have two votes from the minority. And there had been some proposals to just have one vote from the minority, but the reason that experts want to avoid that is because you can basically buy one member, and
you can say, hey, I can make this district work well for you.
And then that person could defect from their party's best interests. So it has two members of the minority.
Okay. I'm not going to press you to three and four.
Okay.
There are steps three and four, and it can get even more complicated. But, and I do want to point out that part of this too, in the new guidelines that have been laid out, you can't split, or you have to try not to split jurisdictions, counties, cities, at least minimize that. Some will still be split, but, you know, you have to minimize that. So, Howard, right now, this breaks out, as I was saying before, we have 16 representatives, 12 Republicans, 4 Democrats. If this passes, how much change will there really be? Since, as I set this up, the votes in Ohio sort of split 50-50, but we're not going to get to 8-8. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Probably not. I mean, that map would almost be impossible to draw. What's also likely to happen in the next census is that we're going to lose a congressional seat in Ohio, and we'll be down to 15, and you'll be, you know, you'll have a higher number of people in each congressional district. But there's no, you know, the thing that's so extraordinary about this is that there's really no organized opposition to this. I mean, and as Andy said, when starting off, that this is pretty much in everybody's best interest. They understand now that, you know, taking a chance and rolling a dice on staying in power for the next 4 or 5 years is not a really good bet. So it was time to come up with some kind of compromise, and this is what they came up with. Now, there are people who don't like it. Some people say it still gives too much power to the elected officials and not to independent people who are, you know, just interested in good government. But there's no organized opposition.
Well, there are individuals who have opposed this.
Yeah.
Some people feeling it goes too far. It gives up too much power, especially there are a number of Republicans in the House who voted against it. There are others. There was a letter to the Cincinnati Enquirer by someone who pointed out, that he was suspicious of any proposal on redistricting where both the Democratic and the Republican Party supported it. The question being, how much change can this really mean? And is this really significant?
And there are people raising those questions. But like I say, there's no campaign out there to try to defeat this thing.
And it's huge. The support is huge.
Yeah, and I would say the people who are raising it's just a small population of people who are raising those questions. I mean, they might bring up some good points, but I would say that the reason there's no huge organized opposition to this is partly because it was a pretty open process. They did invite several community organizations to be part of the process. They were at the negotiating table with the senators and representatives from both sides of the aisle to talk about it, to see what would be the best process. So they were able to win over a lot of people in the process.
How much fear was there that the federal government might step in on this if Ohio didn't do something on its own? Federal courts have taken some steps in both North Carolina and Pennsylvania to push those states to redraw their lines. Was that a motivation here? Chrissy?
I mean, I think eventually, I don't think there was any danger of that right now. Our current map is set and has not been, it's not in any active court battles. However, that's certainly something you have heard. And we wanted to, the Ohio leaders wanted to basically set their own path, be leaders in this across the country. And really, I mean, gerrymandering is a huge issue across the country, and we're one of the first states to do something like this. So I think honestly, keeping the power in the legislature minimizes the chance that there'll be a huge court battle in the some states that have gotten themselves into some trouble have taken the power out of the legislatures, and it's actually something that the Constitution gives the state legislatures, the power to draw congressional districts. So I think that was looming over folks' heads, but they wanted to come up with a solution that honestly that they could agree on, and so that's probably why some folks have some issues with it. Like, it is created by design. It was created by the people who are in charge right now.
Right.
And it does preserve the two-party system. But that is the system that we have. And if you compare this to the old style of gerrymandering, it is a vast improvement.
Andy, I'm thinking about people here in this end of the state may not, you know, have the picture of all of the districts in Ohio in their minds. Can you talk a little bit about District 8? The snake on the lake, and
I was going to say, well, one looks like a snake, and one looks like a duck with a top hat. I mean, they're carved in very specific ways, and they end up being very, very oddly shaped things. That the one that looks like a duck, and I can't remember which district it is. I think it might be 5. We have a map just outside in our office, but it. There's the tiny sliver that makes up the bill of the duck, if you will, are just two small pieces of two different counties. And so it carves up different counties in different ways and different slivers to carve out one person that way and the other person the other way. And so they are just very awkward looking maps. And it was mentioned earlier, and I think it might be one of the biggest provisions added if it were to pass, is that if you are a small county, I don't think if you're one of the smallest counties in Ohio, I don't think you're even allowed to be cut. Once you get up to more populous counties, Hamilton, you're allowed to cut it twice, making 3 districts. I think that's how it works. So there's a limit on how many times you can cut counties, and that's one of the biggest provisions in the measure.
Howard, one of the issues for this end of the state that it's very observable here, that because Hamilton County is split between U.S. Congressional District 1 and 2, and with the heavy Democratic population in the city of Cincinnati, for city of Cincinnati politicians, let's take our mayor right now, John Cranley, he really has no realistic option to run for Congress at this point. I mean, these are relatively safe districts, and it's a career killer for in a county like ours for Democrats in this particular case.
Yeah, that's true to a certain extent, although the first congressional district might end up being pretty competitive this year with Aftab, Pearl,
Well, the first congressional district has the narrowest win division between Republican Democratic votes in the state. Yeah.
Yeah, and Trump voters too. I mean, but what happened back after the last census was that Steve Chabot, the General Assembly, looked at his district and said, Steve is having too many battles. We're going to make it easier for him. And they took all of Warren County, which is heavily Republican, and added it to the first congressional district and cut off some of the inner city neighborhoods of Cincinnati and put them over in the second congressional district, where they thought they could be absorbed a little more because that extends all the way out to Scioto County. So we know here what the effects of gerrymandering can be, because Cincinnati, Hamilton County has been on the dicing board for this for some time.
One of the other questions here for me, one would be to redraw lines so that we don't have this 12-4 split, and then the whole question of whether we lose a seat is another question. But the question is, how many competitive – I don't see in the rules any goal to create competitive districts. I mean, you could create a whole bunch of safe Republican, safe Democratic districts, but I think we know that every election day we moan how few people actually go out and vote. But what gets people to go out and vote is when it's a tight election and people say, my vote counts. And I think we have to, you know, the question is, what's the split between the Democrats and Republicans? But also, what's the incentive to create competitive districts? Anybody want to jump on that one?
I think it's hard to create incentives because you can't control. I mean, you know, this is going to be obvious, but you can't control where people live. When people live in a certain area and they tend to have they think like minded, so it's hard to create a district where you might find a lot of opposing thought among neighbors. But it is something. There is something to be said for the way they are going to draw these districts are going to. Maybe not particularly make it so that it's a tight race, but I think it's going to draw people more towards the middle. So the Democrats that are voted in might be more moderate Democrats, and it might be more moderate conservatives. But you make a good point, and that's one of the things that I think the legislature struggled with, is you can't really make it competitive in a way where you're going to have tight races between one party against another.
I have just a little bit of time left. What would happen if issue one fails? Where does that leave us? Chrissy?
Okay, so I don't think it's going to fail. I hope you don't mind that I'm saying that. But if it did fail, I think there's enough momentum and enough agreement among the parties that they could make a small tweak and probably take it back to the voters again. It's much cheaper to do it that way than to have someone create petitions and have a bunch of citizens sign them and get it on the ballot. The legislature can do it relatively easily, and I guess there's enough agreement and momentum that they would probably do that.
Okay, well, I want to thank all three of my guests today, Chrissy Thompson, Andy Chow, and Howard Wilkinson. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. Selena Reeder is the assistant producer. Josh Elstro is the technical director. Archives for our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.